Hi, this is Jen Pham and Sora Yi, and welcome to Pham Yi,
a space where we support each other and invite you along the journey.
Hey!
Hey! So, like usual, we're getting started with our rose, thorn, and bud.
Okay, yeah, you go first.
I'll go first. This is officially my last week.
Last week of what?
This is my last week of pregnancy. Well, hopefully. I'm at 39 weeks. That means we're full term. She could technically come at any time and be a full term baby.
You did it.
I did it.
You did
it. I freaking did it. My thorn, however, is she still not here. So, I didn't want to get induced, but actually I've talked to a lot of people and it turns out a lot of people got induced, even if they went to the hospital or a natural. So I might just do it. And then I'm going to bang out with my bud.
Yeah.
But my bud,
I thought you were gonna say you're gonna bang it out with my husband so that she can come out.
We tried.
I feel you, girl.
So if anything, technically bud is we can continue to bang it out until she comes, because I know after that you can't have sex for like 6 weeks.
Yeah, minimum. You're going through a healing process, for sure.
Yeah, so I was like, dude, get it all out right now.
That's so funny because my rose is, I have been having orgasms all week.
That's your rose?
That is my rose.
Oh, I love that. Ooh, yes. That makes me so happy.
I know, I'm on a different type of high, okay? I'm just happy. And I know a lot of women don't get there. Yeah. So we can make that a different episode. But today I am celebrating the gift of women orgasm.
Oh, hell yeah.
With that being said, my thorn is I am so sore.
But that's a good sore.
It is not a body sore. I enjoy being sore longer than a couple hours. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh my god.
But yeah, that is my thorn. And my bud is, I know I've said this before, but I am so excited for Sora's baby. She's supposed to be here in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure if it was up to her, she would just stay in her mommy's tummy. But
oh, no, absolutely.
We're ready to meet you, girl.
Oh, yeah.
Like, girl, you didn't get out. You're about to evict, okay? She's taking up too much real estate. It's okay. I said the same thing to my baby Kylo. So Kylo's birthday is the day before my mom's. And I got induced that Thursday. He came out.
On Friday?
Yeah, he came out late Friday. And then on Saturday is my mom's birthday. And I told him while I was in labor, if you want to share your birthday, then you go ahead and come out on Saturday. But if you don't want to share your birthday, you Aquarius boy, then I know you need to get out.
Oh,
and so he listened
you.
And he was like, I'm getting out, Mom.
That's so you.
He
needs to hold it in himself. Like, there's no way I'm sharing.
The threats are coming out. But it's just like, they're taking up too much real estate, okay? I've sent you the eviction notice. You know the due date. And you're not listening. But, okay. That's besides the point. I'm really, really, really excited to meet her.
Oh, I love your week's rose thorn and bud. This is actually a requested topic to talk about. Pre-therapy versus post-therapy you.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds deep.
It's a lot. I don't even know how to unfold this. Okay. Okay, we can start with Sora. What was pre-therapy you like? How would you best describe yourself in an unbiased way?
Pre-therapy me? I would describe pre-therapy me as unhinged. catastrophic. I've actually been called catastrophic.
Wow.
All over the place. Mm. Yeah, that's the best way I could describe pre-therapy. And that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of like mentally wild.
Not like, just mentally.
Not just
I definitely think in other areas. Yeah, like, even emotionally.
Oh, I was like completely offset.
Yeah.
Like I had no control. Mm-hmm. No control. That actually, that's a great way. Pre-therapy was someone who was not in control of her life or self.
I think with me, that is no control is definitely how I would also describe mm-hmm. myself or my feelings. Mm-hmm. Pre-therapy, Jen was very spontaneous.
Oh, yeah.
Did whatever she wanted, did not care
about
what anyone thought or cared about how anyone felt, which is very, very ignorant. And I was very angry. But the thing is, it's weird because I'm such a happy person that no one can really see me as an angry person. But when you really get to know me, oh man, I've been so angry almost my entire life.
Anger is a real one. Yeah.
I'm still trying to uncover why I'm so angry. Well, this is what I learned in therapy. I have a terrible control problem. And so it makes me nervous as now a mom.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just, okay, we can get into that later. Anyway, pre-therapy me, I had to have everything perfect on how I wanted my plan, my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. That was very much how I was. And I think it does go hand in hand with how my mom raised me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, you saying that, yes, anger was a part that I experienced, but I think also pre-therapy me was numb. Mm. And I did a lot of things to numb myself out or push things away.
Yeah. Which
obviously ultimately makes a lot of things worse.
Yeah. I mean, you guys don't know this, but Sora would just book a flight and just fly somewhere else whenever there were problems. She's like, okay, guys, I'm leaving.
I would fly. I would drive. I did not care about the distance as long as I had transportation mm-hmm. and my own way out. Yeah, I just went. Oh my God, it was fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And I chose flight a lot.
And I chose fight a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, pre-therapy also was rough. Okay, I know. I give mad props to every single loved one out there listening because I know you guys saw a side of us that I'm sure you guys were like, what is going on with her? But you guys stuck it out and you guys are still here and we're so thankful, honestly. I don't think I could even be half the person I am today without everyone that stood by my side through the worst times.
No, absolutely. Okay, so the question is, what made you finally go to therapy?
Okay, mine is not a reason that's the best. So at that time, because I was still a very spontaneous person and I was outside a lot, I couldn't focus on work. I could barely even be awake because I was coming to work hungover all the time. Mm-hmm. And I just needed a pick-me-up. And I went to a doctor that prescribed someone I know some Adderall, and I was like, okay, let me go try it out. Then they sent me to a psych doctor to prescribe because they can't do it, whatever. And I don't know the real process. I don't even know if this is legal or not, whatever. But then I went to the psych doctor, and I didn't know she was a psych therapist. Mm-hmm. So you have to like see a psych therapist before you even see the psych doctor, or if this therapist is the doctor. I don't even know. I didn't even get that far. So I'm filling out this form, and the form is saying a lot of things that I didn't want to be honest about, where it was saying how many drinks were you having a day and how many drinks are you having a week? Do you use drugs? In every single answer, it made me feel like, what am I doing with my life? And do I even want to be honest with this doctor that is going to keep it confidential? And so when I filled out the form, honestly, I submitted it to her and I said, hey, don't judge me off that form. And she said, why would you say that? And she's like, of course I wouldn't judge you. like, well, what made you want to even say that? And I told her that it just, this is such a black and white questionnaire that I don't think it's a real representation of me. Mm-hmm. So I started therapy by accident due to wanting to get some Adderall. Mm. Just FYI, guys, I never got the Adderall prescription, okay?
You did?
No, I got depression description instead, a prescription.
Depressant?
Yes. Like antidepressant, yeah, medication prescription instead.
Did you take it?
I told her I'm not depressed. What are you talking about?
I literally was just like,
dude, I am not depressed. And she's like, well, you're having a little sleep, all these things. And I was telling her, dude, I am not depressed. I will tell you because I've been there.
Yeah.
So I was like, at that moment and at that stage of my life, I didn't feel like I was depressed. And depression can look different for everyone. Mm-hmm. But at that moment, I knew I didn't feel like that because I felt it before. And I know how difficult it is to get out of it. But I don't know. I was just like, girl, I'm not taking this. Mm-hmm. because I truly didn't believe I needed it. And I didn't want to take something I didn't need.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, and I'm a true believer that no one knows their body more than you do.
Oh, yeah.
So even if a doctor tells me, like, hey, you should do this, that doesn't mean you really should. That, I think I take it as a recommendation. Anyway, long story short, that's how I started therapy. How did you start therapy?
Oh, wow. Well, mine was very different. Or I don't know. So originally, my way, I started doing therapy on those online platforms, BetterHelp or things like that, which, side note, apparently BetterHelp got shut down or something for releasing client information. So they were part of a lawsuit, and I actually $9 back or something from that lawsuit somehow. But okay, anyways, I started doing those online platforms. That did not work for me. Mm-hmm. And originally I started therapy because I thought I had an addiction problem. Mm. So those conversations were revolving around, I couldn't quit smoking, mm-hmm. and things like that. So nicotine and weed. I know it's like a very common thing for a lot of people, but for me, it was this thing where I was very self-aware of myself, and I wasn't doing it as a form of leisure. I was doing it as a form to like run away from situations. So if I was like super angry or super sad, if my emotions were too overwhelming, I would resort to smoking. Mm-hmm. And so it made me feel like I was out of control. Mm-hmm. But that's what I originally went for. They didn't work out. And then so I kind of stopped looking and I was like, you know what? I'll figure it out. I'll just quit myself. But actually the things that made me finally go to therapy was, one, my sister. Her and I used to live together, mm-hmm. and I would be involved in very toxic fights in my past relationships where there's like yelling and screaming and, you know, just kind of be straight and honest. Things got physical sometimes. And so she would hear it, and I didn't realize how bad of an environment it created for someone else in the household with them. Mm-hmm. And I look back and I feel so bad for other people who may have lived with me because I never took other people into consideration. Mm-hmm. Like, I had those fights. I was having these screaming matches with other people in the apartment.
I am so the same.
I know.
And I have gone girlfriend crazy.
Girlfriend so crazy. And I'm like, I didn't see the problem with it because I was just so engulfed in that situation. Mm-hmm. So my sister finally, well, she basically bust up on me and was just telling me how terrible it is to live with me when things like this happen. And still naturally at that time, I was in denial. So I was like, you're not giving me a break, things like that, you know, like victimizing myself at the same time. But as things continued, I noticed there was a pattern of my inability to control my emotions. Mm-hmm. And it started becoming more apparent. And I was like, okay, I think I'm starting to notice these flags. And it's get to a point where you're just so tired of it.
Dude,
like,
yes.
You're just so freaking tired of the same thing. And you're like, okay, like, I'm not happy. Like, this is not the way I want to live. This is not that, like, kind of relationships I want to be in. Like, you're done. You're so physically and mentally exhausted. I think it gets to a point where you're like, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me actually go look for a therapist online that I could go see in person.
Yeah.
And I started looking for a therapist when COVID started. Originally. So
oh my gosh, that was my timeline.
Oh,
well,
really?
Not when COVID started. This was right before COVID started. So I had a couple sessions pre-COVID pandemic. And then everything shut down.
Yeah, so everything was online.
Yeah.
And I personally, those didn't work for me.
Same.
So once I realized all this, by this time it was...
towards the end of COVID.
Mine was like fully end of COVID.
Okay.
So like she was opening, people were opening up their practices more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to one that I found that I could go in person. And she was a freaking game changer for me. Like,
wow.
I consistently went to her for over a year. And then I kind of do checkups still now
mm-hmm.
and then. Though I was taking an acting class.
Yeah.
And when you are doing these classes, it's very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You are fully trying. It's just so vulnerable. People can see right through you.
Yeah.
You're letting yourself go. And I remember I cried during one of these exercises. But my cry was very a hysterical cry. It wasn't a normal just tear. It was like I couldn't breathe. It was very hyperventilating cries. And so after class, she was like, I can tell you have a lot of trauma. And
mm-hmm.
I think that was one thing. I was like, wow, like someone that I didn't know that well could see that from one instance from me. And that was at a very raw moment. There are genuinely things that I need to work on because
mm-hmm.
it was truly very apparent.
Yeah.
So that's what made me go to therapy.
I remember my first therapy session, and I remember her first question for me was, what traumas have you gone through? And I was so in denial. And, you know, obviously the
yeah.
purpose of me going to therapy wasn't because of therapy, you know? It wasn't because I was looking for self-growth or anything like that. I was looking for a pick-me-up. And so when she asked me that, I just sat there and I told her, I don't have any trauma.
So what did she say to that? Like,
she said, okay. Like, she was a little like, what do you mean? Or is this girl lying to me? I don't know. But I think it was for me, I've accepted everything that's happened in my life.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't see it as trauma. I didn't
uh-huh.
see it as a negative or a positive impact on my life. I just saw it for what it was.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And how do I move on? And I am the type of person that if I don't like something, I will block it from my memory and never go back there.
Oh, yeah.
I
super avoid it.
That's why I joke, like, oh, wait, I didn't date them because I forgot you existed, dude. Not in a mean way, but it was just, like, too much.
That's actually so true, though.
Yes.
There are some things that I, like, have blocked out. I just don't remember.
I don't remember. And,
yeah.
and there's so many times in my life where I was just floating.
Oh.
Floating through life with all the intake of substances that I was doing, so I don't remember. And I have a pretty good memory, I would say, before having a baby.
Yeah.
So anyway, besides the point, she tried to say, it's like, okay, let's unpack that, tell me about your childhood. And I'm like, okay. But I do think one thing that she did help me understand, even though I was fighting her on it,
mm-hmm.
because I was in so much denial, was so I have three younger sisters, and my parents are obviously not from here. They came in their late 20s, and so by the time they came over here to America, they started a family. My mom wasn't even in America for a year. She met my dad, And so they went ahead and started a family. And the growing up process as a first generation Asian American is a lot. And it's even more as a firstborn. So the responsibility of my sister's success and being a good person and all the things a mom's supposed to do, it kind of landed on my lap. So at the age of 13, I was pretty much raising my sisters. And not in a way where my mom wasn't there, but it was just like she worked 9 to 9.
Yeah.
Like how many hours in a day does she really see us?
Yeah.
So the responsibility of my sisters doing well and in school and being a good person, I guess, and all the things and doing tours, it fell onto my lap. So at a very young age, I was basically a project manager. I was already doing all the things, and I am telling them what they can and cannot do. And so that is where my controlling stems from. Pretty much. Mm. Doctor was saying, you know, that is trauma. Your parents shouldn't have had you raising their kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here like, my parents put a roof over my head. I would have done anything for them. Yeah. You know, and I'm sitting here fighting her, telling her it's normal. And she was also minority.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, do you not get it? Like, like you're not... Like, do you not understand? But she's like, but that doesn't mean it's okay.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean your parents, like, they did what they thought was best.
Yeah.
And maybe at that time, that was what's best for them. Because it's their first time being parents, too.
Mm-hmm.
So then she's explaining this, and she's like, you have to forgive your parents. And I'm like, well, I'm not even upset at them. So a lot of the conversations, I felt like there was tension because I was fighting her on what my trauma was. I was like, that isn't trauma. That's what I went through. And I'm so grateful that my parents could pay for our private education and that my parents are able to buy us a car at 18 and do all these things for us because, you know, they worked their butt off in a country that they had to learn a new language at almost 30. You know, I can't imagine learning a new language right now. But I mean, I think that's why it was so difficult for me. But when I finally grasped the concept of, hey, I have a controlling problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of just went downhill. I think because I love talking,
mm-hmm.
I started sharing and then sharing and then sharing. And then I ended up crying.
Oh my God.
And so every single session was me crying. And every single time she made me cry, I told her I'm not gonna come back. Stop making me cry, I'm a happy person. And I don't know, maybe that's why she wanted to give me the prescription.
I love how you said that. And there's actually a lot of takeaways from what you said that I very much connect to. I didn't necessarily fight with my therapist. But I will say the first session is always just so awkward. You don't mm-hmm. really know what to say. It's not like I know what I'm going through. You know, I just know I'm here because I feel like I need to be here.
Yeah.
One thing about that you said about your parents, how you felt like there was never like a trauma with them. I felt the same way in a sense where like I felt like I kind of idolized my parents for everything that they did. And I felt like there was no room for me to ever be ungrateful.
Yeah.
Or think, you know, well, you could have done better, things like that.
I never criticized my parents for anything that they've done because I'm like, you guys are the best in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were the best growing up, but now when I look back, I'm like, they literally did everything that they could for us.
And I don't know if it's a minority story. I don't know if it's an Asian story, but I felt the same way. And so I remember going in and like, I repetitively said, I don't want my mom to feel like she messed up because she was a single mother of three. That's not easy. She... Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of things. And my therapist was just like, but there are moments that she did.
Mm.
And that kind of like threw a loop because I was like, oh my God, she's human.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever saw my parents as human.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, they're normal people. This is their first time living life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is their first time navigating in this world. And I never saw them as people who could make mistakes or mess up. And so when she told me that, I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, they did. They did. There were a lot of moments where they did mess up, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I actually would use my mom's anger as the reason why I was angry.
Oh, I did that too.
I was like, well, my mom yelled at me growing up, so that's where I got it from.
Yeah.
And then I remember my old manager, she said, Jen, just because somebody jumps off a bridge, that doesn't mean you jump off a bridge. And I was like, but it's my mom. It's what I'm like. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's what you grew up.
And then she said to me, if your mom and your dad are broke, is that all you're going to do?
Yeah.
And then that kind of hit me. I think that comment
from
my manager hit me, where she was like, wait, you're right. You know, just because my parents did something one way, that doesn't mean I have to do it that way. Mm-hmm. And that took me a long time to grasp. And then another thing that happened was my ex, he said, out of everything in our relationship, I think I've only had one takeaway from him, was he always says, Jen, people are not out here to piss you off. Because if they knew it would piss you off, they would never have done it. No one loves, like, no one wants you to be upset. Like, it's not on purpose. And I don't know why my anger came from everyone coming out to attack me. And maybe it's because I was bullied so much growing up in a private school, where I was always attacked. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was in a very toxic relationship where I always felt like I had to be on defense mode. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have a safe space. So I think it's just really difficult for me to not take things so personal. And like, with that being said, I always wore my heart, and to this day, wear my heart on my sleeve. Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking of it as a negative, it's very much the best thing I've continued to do my entire life, is because if I changed who I was from the people that hurt me, I would just be a boring person that didn't love people. And I love people.
No,
so.
Absolutely. I think toxic relationships does that to you, though. Like, mm-hmm. truly, or any type of toxic relationship can cause you... Because I also struggle with defensiveness, and that's something I still struggle to this day. And one thing I learned about therapy is you're never done. It's continuous.
Yeah.
And even if you're not going to therapy, you're still doing it on your own, you know, at home, and your practice. It's a practice. It's literally a skill to not take things so personally, and said, like, not everyone's out to get you.
I had to really untrain my mind for not being a controlling person, because at that time in therapy, my sister was dating someone that I wasn't a fan of, and truly was not a fan of. Mm-hmm. And I would do everything in my power to explain to her why this isn't gonna work. This shouldn't work. This doesn't make sense. Like, it's not right. And my therapist was saying, Jen, just because 1 + 1 = 5 to her, and the whole world knows 1 + 1 = 2, and that's all you wanna tell her, 1 + 1 = 2. That does not mean you yelling at her, you giving her reasons why it is what it is, changes her perception of what it is in her mind.
Yeah.
And it was very, very difficult for me to let go, but at that moment, it did change. And I think it changed the dynamic of my relationships with my sister, because not just her, but all of my sisters, where they actually started to come to me more. I mean, obviously, this took years and months for me to change and continue to work on. And I still have a problem with it now of controlling, but I'm just trying to be mindful of and understand more. And I think before I wasn't understanding or even being mindful for what other people felt. It was just like how Jen felt.
Yeah. No, I even think that's like crucial to learn. Now that we're going to have kids, and our kids are probably going to do different things that we think is, you know, like, they're going to do things that they think is best for them that we don't necessarily agree with. Because I know I did protective instinct.
Yeah.
And I think that does slightly come from being the oldest. So.
Not slightly.
No, a lot. Because I do the same to my sister, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that's just It's like a growing experience.
Okay.
So, what were your aha moments during therapy? Oh, I guess we already continued or started on aha moments, but like, were there any other things that stood out to you in therapy that you remember that were really big moments for you?
I think those are my biggest takeaways, was the whole controlling problem, the practice of not controlling, the watching, actually the observing of other people, letting go,
mm-hmm.
and reflecting on how other people let go as well. And then having that control on how I can get better on my anger. Because for some reason I am so angry, maybe not anymore, but I was really angry. And then, you know, during that time I was going to therapy pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And then when the pandemic happened, everything closed. And I went to gym about twice a day. So that's where I was getting all my happy chemicals, yeah. right? And so now I resulted into running, then I got shin splits, and then I hit a really depressive spot. And that is the highlight of how I went back to God again.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't go to church or anything a lot for years, for 5+ years. And I used to teach Sunday school and things, but I did have a really long fallout with God. And with the depressive state, I think that's what gave me an aha moment. Like, I need somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my mom at 3 a.m. I was like, Mom, I need help. And I was really, really depressed. And it was really hard for me. And I couldn't even move because my shin splits. But, and my mom, older generation, they don't really understand what being depressed is like.
Yeah.
You know, traveling to another country. But she, I could tell she didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And I just needed help. And I was in a bad place with my sisters. So essentially, my mom would just said like, hey, Jen, just, you know, my mom was out of state. And so she was like, Jen, the only person that can be there for you is God. And that's when I was like, maybe she's right. And so I went back to God then. And I don't think without my faith, I could be strong enough to get out of that depressive state.
I 100% agree.
It's so hard when someone's depressed to come out because so many people have so many expectations for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not just the oldest of my sisters, but I'm one of the oldest of a lot of my cousins.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there was a lot of expectations put on you.
This is why I don't like to talk about therapy.
Sorry, shit. I didn't realize this would turn into a therapy session. I'm also glad that you're able to be this open and vulnerable. Like,
only because it's you.
And the entire world.
And all my besties online.
Oh, but I think it's very strong of you to be able to be this vulnerable, Jen.
Yeah.
And that's great. And honestly, I think it will work out.
Yeah.
It literally shows you do wear your heart on your chest. You actually do.
Yeah.
This is full proof of that.
Okay, I'm gonna spin the table so I can feel a little better. Okay, Sora, what were your aha moments?
Okay, let me try to spin it around. My aha moments, so, you know, like, it was, my aha moments was like, I think my biggest problem was there were expectations being put on me, but I think the person who put it on me the most was myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled with that for a long time, and I still do. I'm very hard on myself. And so one thing I've been working on for a couple years now is giving myself grace. Because there is literally nothing anyone could say to me that would put me down more than what I've already put myself down with.
Yeah.
And I would go home and it's a matter of constantly replaying my actions,
mm-hmm.
you know, words that I've said, and it gets so tiring because I'm essentially grading myself on my behavior, my like personality and things like that. And that's just like self-loving way to live. And so I think I lacked a lot of self-love. So in therapy, one of my big aha moments was coming to the conclusion that I need to be honest with myself without being cruel.
Ooh.
And I think avoidance came from not wanting to look myself in the mirror. Because if I did, I was cruel to myself and I would nitpick and judge. But being able to look at yourself in the mirror and evaluating areas you can grow, but not putting yourself down, I feel like one of the foundations of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I had to do. That was one of my big things. That's something I'm still working to this day, really. And then the other parts of it was family. I think it was mainly relationships. I relied heavily on love and seeking love from others. Because I guess there was just a lack that I felt in growing up. It's not that I wasn't loved, you know? I loved my childhood. When I look back, I wouldn't change a thing. But I think there was an area that was missing from my heart. And depression is actually it's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that've never experienced depression and they don't get it. And it's okay. I'm glad that there are people who don't have to feel this way and never go through it. But it's one of those things where you're so, like, you just feel decapitated in a way. Like, mm-hmm. There were days where you just genuinely do not get out of bed. And it's not like a lazy thing. It's just you feel so lifeless. And the best you can do is open your eyes, I feel like. Or else I'd rather be asleep and numb it. So,
I think that's a good example. I mean, I remember it took all my strength just to go brush my teeth.
No, actually.
It was almost a workout for me.
Yeah, no, it lasts for a long time. Sometimes you don't even realize how long it lasts.
And that's why I'm thinking, like, that numbness for us. And, I mean, maybe numbness for you, but for me, it just felt like I was floating.
Oh, yeah, I relied heavily on just smoking.
I mean, I didn't even do... I had no thoughts.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my brain. And I am, my mind goes a million miles per hour. But
why? Like, what made you go back to church? What made you, like, where did God all of a sudden come from? And my only answer is he saved me. Like, I don't feel like I would mentally, I might still be here, you know, but mentally, I was so lost. And it truly has changed my life.
If you didn't share this, I wouldn't have reflected back on areas of our friendship where you were just not present, no matter how.
Yeah, I was not.
And it didn't matter how many people were in the room. You were, you, someone could have a conversation with you and you were not there. You were not in the conversation at all, even though it was just a two people conversation. And I remember that happened a lot.
Uh-huh. I actually have people get mad at me.
Oh, really?
Because of that, yeah. Because they would talk to me and I would just...
What? Just not be there.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't even respond, honestly, because I didn't hear them. Like, I was in somewhere else. And I think also, depending on substance, was just another way of, like, numbing things out. But I think also finding God has led to finding such a supporting partner.
Yeah.
Who has helped me and helped... Oh my God, has helped my anger in so many ways that I did not think was possible.
Yeah.
Literally.
Same.
Like.
Same.
I didn't think healthy was an achievable thing. You know, having someone who could be so supportive, so loving, not just that, but help you through it. And it's almost like you can't even remember the last time you were in that place.
Yeah. Or even be that vulnerable with support.
No, actually, I was Arthur Fist for a long time. And then I didn't realize it, but in the beginning, he would just kind of hold my hand and be like, it's okay, you can stop clenching.
Like, oh my gosh.
And I didn't even realize it, but my fists were like clenched all the time when I was like pissed off. And dude, you don't have to yell.
I know.
Like, I didn't know.
I
could have a truly have a conversation without yelling at someone.
I didn't know I could have a conversation with someone I'm in a relationship with, tell them how I'm feeling, and not have to defend myself or for them to go straight victim or for them to turn the tables and
And then it's my fault somehow.
Yeah.
Like, that was so weird for me. He was like, okay, I hear you, and I'm going to do better. I was like, wait, I'm trying to argue.
Like, it's all like, you argue. Don't know what to do. Like,
wait, what? Like,
are we
it's
done?
It's so weird that, wait, we resolved this? And you're actually going to go through with what you said to her? I thought that was so crazy to me, honestly.
Oh my god. So I guess that puts us in, like, this is where post-therapy is.
Because pre-therapy us are dating, guys. It was just a hot mess.
It was a hot mess. You know, I'm sure there were factors that played into it, like age and, mm-hmm. you know, like, lifestyle and things like that. But, god, it was a trek.
Yeah. I do love what you said, how Alex is so supportive. Because I remember just yelling at Colin, like, crying on the floor of our kitchen. And he's just like, we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
And everything's going to be okay. And I'm like, well, is it? You're not going to leave me? Like, you still want to be with me after all this time? And it's just the disbelief that I still can't believe someone wants to be with me still. Yeah. And it's just like really truly believing that you are worthy.
Oh my god, yeah. I think my toxic trait in the beginning was kind of, it's very, this is terrible, I know, but like it's kind of playing that card like, all right, like if you don't want to deal with it, get out. You know? Yeah. Like, I'll be fine.
I don't need you.
Yeah, I don't need you. And it's self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. You're truly self-sabotaging yourself because you don't feel like you deserve it. You don't feel like you deserve something when it's so good.
Yeah.
Because you've probably experienced something bad for so long, and you made yourself believe that you are also a bad.
Yeah.
Like, you're a bad apple. There's no way that something good deserves this either.
I can't believe God would gift me you.
Yeah.
Like, wait, I am that deserving.
Yeah.
That I have a good man by my side.
Yeah. And so it's just, wow, it's so crazy to see how far we have come. And it's wild what a partner can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And friends.
Not just partner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it has to be, sorry, supportive partner.
Yeah, like,
but supportive. Also, yes, friends and family.
Yeah,
to be able to support us going through all of that. That's the huge shout out to them, because we really wouldn't be half as great as we are now.
But I didn't think, there's a lot of vulnerability putting your trust in one person.
Yes.
And that person actually being able to help you out of that. I didn't know that was a thing.
I know. That was really difficult.
Yeah, it is difficult. Because your friends is one thing. I feel like the person you live with every day literally sees your ins and outs.
Yes. And every single little habit.
Yeah. And you can't hide it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to see it. And when you have someone who truly chooses to stick by because they just unconditionally love you, it's a different feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that got really serious.
No. That's why I said at the beginning, I was like, where do we even start? But we did it, and we made it. And if you guys are still listening now, man, I want to say thank you for listening, because we did share a lot of deep stuff today.
Yeah.
And obviously an authentic part of ourselves that, I mean, I learned new things from Sora, and I see her every week.
literally, Carol, I didn't expect this conversation to turn this way.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that it did.
Me too. Yes, this was therapeutic.
This is very therapeutic. No, actually, funny enough, our therapy post was a therapeutic session.
Yes. Okay, so that is all the time we have today. I know it's been so much going on and a lot to unpack, but let us know what you guys want to know about us, because this was per request, and here we are.
And we got real.
Crying.
So we'll get real.
Okay, bye.
Bye.